This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
4 minutes after 12 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Talk about a gear change. Sometimes we have little conversations off air. One of the most important interviews I'll do this year, no doubt, just then with Kira. And then coming off the back of that, we launch into our weekly visit to the shallow end of our shared time together. But hey-ho, it is indeed time for Mystery Hour, your weekly opportunity to achieve the sort of... You know, part of me is hoping that Kira's left the building now. I don't want her to think that she's just appeared on a radio programme that usually just faffs about doing rubbish like this instead of discussing all the important issues that we discuss the rest of the time. So for 1 hour of the week, if you're new to this programme, we have some fun. And that hour is now upon us. Your weekly opportunity to achieve the sort of satisfaction not ordinarily available anywhere else on your radio dial. But we will be returning to the major issues of the moment, not least the situation in Ukraine, tomorrow morning at 10. 5 minutes after 12. So this is a game, essentially, which has no purpose except entertainment and amusement and a modicum of enlightenment, a modicum of education. But if you're anything like me, you'll probably forget the stuff that you learn before Sheila's even reached her first junction on her programme. I offer a promise that you will know more by 1 o'clock today than you do now. You will know more by 1 o'clock today than you do now. And I stand by that promise. I don't think there's ever been a Mystery Hour that hasn't delivered at least one nugget of knowledge to every single person listening. But as I say, you might have actually lost that nugget of knowledge by 1:10 this afternoon. Or, of course, if you're listening on the podcast, whatever time is relevant. It is a feature where people ring in to ask questions, silly, serious, scientific, or none of the above. And then other people ring in to answer the questions. And if you've never listened to it before, you're in for a treat. The podcast is available, by the way. Quite a lot of people every holiday season get in touch to say, I didn't realise there was like a back catalogue of podcasts. We listened to 11 while we were driving to Spain. And it's really lovely because all the family enjoy it. Everybody learns something. It's generally pretty funny. But there are loads of them available Global Player, LBC. And in recent years, months, last Christmas, in recent months, we've had a wonderful addition to the Mystery Hour family, which is the Mystery Hour board game, a free copy of which makes its way into the grasping mitts of whoever provides my favourite contribution to the weekly programme. The terms and conditions are, of course, available at lbc.co.uk, where you can also find details of how to get yourself on the Global Player app, which is probably the easiest way to access the Mystery Hour archive. And that's it, really, isn't it? And my decision is final. I literally just send a game to my favourite contributor. If you're not lucky enough to win one, don't worry, you can buy one. MysteryHour.co.uk is the exclusive dedicated portal, but you can also find copies of the Mystery Hour board game, and they're easy to find because my grinning face, a photograph that looks as though it was taken about 30 years ago, will be grinning at you from it wasn't taken 30 years ago, it's taken about 20 years ago. It will be grinning at you. It's the power of Photoshop and airbrush. Will be grinning at you from the box. Or of course, you can, as ever with almost everything else on the planet, you can buy it from Amazon as well. And that round of applause is, of course, the sound you will hear if you provide a correct answer. I've done it again. It's gone down the wrong hole, and I'm live on the radio. This kind of thing never happens to Chris Moyles. Chantelle is in Tower Hamlets. Chantelle, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Take your time.
No problem. I'm wondering, why do we cry? So,
usually because we've just swallowed something down the wrong hole and you're live on the radio desperately pretending not to be having some sort of paroxysm.
I was just thinking that you might be crying now. You might be producing tears. Mm. Why do we produce tears? Why do we do that?
It's a lovely question, actually. I can't believe we've never had it before, which means we probably have. But given that I can't remember the answer, I'm happy to ask it again. You've also, Chantelle, given me a wonderful opportunity to talk about the last time I cried before this time. Which was last night.
Oh.
Watching Sister Act. What's Watching Sister Act at the Hammersmith Apollo, which is, I mean, a musical to beat all musical. An absolutely magnificent show. It's on for another 5 weeks, so if you get the chance to get yourself down there, I could not recommend it highly enough. Beverly Knight, just delivering a performance of sublime perfection, Chantel.
Wow.
You weren't expecting this.
So I might be able to get down.
Right, well, it is absolutely brilliant. Jennifer Saunders playing the Mother Superior, Clive Rowe playing the Copper. There's a young woman in it who plays Sister Margaret Roberts or something. There's Mary Margaret Roberts, is it? Or Sister Mary Roberts, who just comes to the front of the stage and delivers. I mean, she's not even in the sort of on the top of the poster, and she delivers one of the most beautiful moments I've ever seen on a West End stage. But my goodness me, Beverly Knight, great friend of the program, delivers the performance of but that's why I cried last night, because it was such a beautiful.
So why do you think though? Why do you think the tears came out? Why? What was the function of the tears?
You mean the evolutionary function, really, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because like we sweat to help control body temperature, and we sneeze if we get something up our nose to help clear it out. Why do we produce tears? Why does that happen? And it happens in a range of situations. Happy, overwhelming, sad, angry even sometimes. Why does that happen?
I don't know if I should say this on the radio. I make sure that no one clips this, because I'm about to go peak Partridge. I sometimes cry a bit when I'm eating really nice cheese. Do you not get that? Okay. I kind of get weird. No, I shouldn't have gone. I'll leave that one there.
No,
let's pretend that never happened. Let's pretend that bit never happened, all right?
No one was listening anyway.
Yeah, exactly that. 11 minutes after 12. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Great question there from Chantelle about crying, which contained absolutely no reference to cheese whatsoever. Great, lovely stuff. Great stuff. Why do we cry? Why do we cry? John is in Bristol. John, question or answer?
James, welcome home, mate.
Hello, John. How are you? Welcome home. There he is.
Yeah, I phoned you a couple of weeks ago when I was on my second honeymoon in Greece and you was away.
Whereabouts in Greece were you?
I were on the island of Skiathos.
Skiathos.
Bay in Skiathos.
Did you have a lovely time?
Oh, it was fabulous, because we were celebrating, well, it's my birthday Saturday and I'm 70. We were celebrating our 15 years wedding anniversary. And
That's nice. So when you say a second honeymoon, it was with the same person.
Oh yeah.
That's nice. I thought it was. Yes, that's lovely.
Yeah, and we did our wedding vows on the beach at sunset. It was absolutely lovely.
Polyomorphy.
Yeah. So that's where the question came from.
Go on then.
Where does the word honeymoon come from, or what does it mean? I know it's ancient.
Yes.
But there's more to it than just slap and tickle.
Well, hang on. You mean the actual etymology? The origin of the word?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know this. I actually know this.
You do?
Yeah.
Go on, then.
I think it's in the board game, John. Have you got the board game?
I have got the board game, yeah.
No, it takes a lot. You'd have to play a lot of games to get through every card in it.
Yeah, I know. I haven't seen that, no.
You know what mead is?
Yes.
Mead is a drink made out of honey, right?
That's right, yeah.
An alcoholic drink.
Yeah.
If you got married in the olden days, the village would all club together. Not so much in the UK, I don't think, but that is moot. To give you enough mead to last a month. And a month being a lunar month, as in one passage of the moon. And that is where honeymoon comes from.
God Almighty.
No, just call me James.
Yeah, James. I mean, that's
isn't that great?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely spot on with that. Yeah.
Qualifications. It's come up before on Mystery Hour. I'm 99.9% certain of it, but that doesn't matter. It's all in the moment, isn't it?
But I tell you what, on the Friday night before we flew out to Greece, we nearly never made it.
Why is that then?
Well, because I went down the garage.
Yeah.
We just outside Bristol, a little village, Farrington Gurney.
Oh, lovely.
And the garage to fill the car up with petrol and the pound sign's roaring away.
Oh, I know.
Hardly any juice is going in, and I came over all faint and dizzy.
At the cost.
And I dialed 111, they asked the symptoms, and I told them.
Here we go. Hang on, everybody. Wait, everybody. Punchline incoming. Go on.
They said you're suffering from coronavirus.
What's that? Give me a round of applause, quick. Oh, mind how you go, John. Congratulations. Was it worth the wait? Jackson Haywards Heath. Jack, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on. Likewise.
I'm just wondering, why is a sweet potato classed as one of your five a day and a normal potato isn't?
Yeah, I mean, you're presuming that a sweet potato and a potato are more closely related to each other than a...
apple and a potato.
Yeah, I think you might be wrong, you see. I think a sweet potato might be more closely related to, for example, a carrot than a potato.
Really?
Yeah.
That doesn't sound right.
Does it? No, it doesn't, does it? Now I said it out loud. But it's not... I mean, there's not a lot of similarity between a sweet potato and a potato, apart from external, apart from the shape. The flat. I mean, you do very different things with a sweet potato from what you would do with a potato.
Well, no, because you can mash it, you can roast it, you can...
Yeah, well, you can do that with carrot.
Yeah.
Or a swede. It's more like a swede. So I'm putting it on the board, obviously, but I think the answer is going to be something along the lines of, even though we call it a sweet potato, it is not actually a potato, it is in fact a yam. Not a yam, but, you know, something that is not a potato.
Okay, well, good to find the answer.
I shall do. I almost put money on us finding the answer to this one, Jack. Do you like do you like sweet potatoes? Because Mrs. O'Brien sometimes says, oh, should we order sweet potato fries instead of fries? And, oh, it's one of those things where you sort of think, oh, I have to say yes, because they're obviously so much more healthy. But, I mean, I'm having a burger. I don't want sweet potato fries with my burger. I want
sweet potato fries with a steak. Lovely.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I'd much rather have sweet potato than a normal potato.
Heretic. Heritage. You're one of those communists, aren't you? Let's try and find out. Why is sweet potato healthier than potato? It's one of your five a day when potato per se is not. It's 12:16 and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. From day one, it's always been the people who make Virgin Atlantic, Virgin Atlantic. They are proud to fly their customers, and their people always go the extra mile. They and their customers are a dazzling collection of individuals who march to their own drumbeat and fly their own path. Their people are the beating heart of the business, the soul of their bright red brand. Travel is one of life's great joys, but only if everybody can be themselves. Changing the rules around wearing makeup and not showing your tattoos, making them work for today. Whatever works best for you. We're on board Virgin Atlantic. See the world differently.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
18 minutes after 12. I've had quite a lot of complaints about that comment about crying when I eat very nice cheese, which is fair enough. And I always like to air complaints on the programme. I was quite honest and upfront about them. So this is what Liz in Westminster had to say.
That is a disgrace.
I know. I'm sorry. I won't comment about my physical reactions to eating cheese again, ever. I promise. Sorry. James is in Leeds. James, question or answer?
Oh, hi, James. It's a question.
Carry on.
So the letter W.
Yes.
So on a standard English keyboard, when you look at it, it's more like a double V.
Yes.
So in the English alphabet, why do we call it a W when it looks more like a double V?
Well, because it didn't. It used to look like in Latin. If I get this right, carry on.
So.
No, it is W because a U used to look like V. U used to look like a V. It comes from the Latin, doesn't it?
Oh, does it? Okay.
I think so. I could be wrong.
Oh,
but,
right.
I mean, the obvious answer is that we used to, whatever it is a double of, it used to look like that. They've never gone, oh, let's call it a double U, even though it is actually a double V. When they called it a double U, it was a double U. And either the way we draw a double U has changed a bit or the way we draw a U has changed a bit. And I get confused. What is it in Latin? Think of a Latin word. Go on, James. Think of it. What have we got?
No, I'm no good with Latin. Sorry.
No. Just veni, vidi, vici. There's no U there, is there? Veni, vidi, vici. Is there a V and a U? This isn't really helping, is it?
But then, even when you go across our standard alphabet, you'd think to put the U and the W next to one another rather than separate it with a V.
Yeah. I mean, you're going quite deep now.
Just a little bit. It's the first letter of my surname, and I've only just thought of it recently, and I'm thinking, why is it a double U when it's a double V?
Yeah, they wouldn't put a UVW. I mean, they didn't order the alphabet based on what the letters look like, mate, did they?
Yeah, that's true.
No. So you've got a U, a V, and a W, and why didn't
they?
Yeah, it's a double U. It's got nothing to do with V's. That's it. And also, if you're doing it by hand, it's a double U, isn't it?
Well, my writing's atrocious, but I used to point my W's.
Really?
I never used
what sort of a monster are you? Did you go to school? That should have been bad. Scout would have been beaten out of you by the monks at my school, mate. No, I mean, you can't do a pointed V on a W.
I went to a comprehensive school, I don't know if that makes any difference.
Look, I'll put it on the board, but I'm pretty sure that it was a W when it was invented, as it were.
Well, see what we get, if we get anything.
Yeah, well, who knows? I'll find out for you. Why is a W called a W and not called a double V? 0345 6060973. Tony's in Sittingbourne. Tony, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on, Tony.
Along probably with most of my generation, when I was a child, I was told if you dropped a penny
off the Empire State Building.
Yeah, that's exactly the one. I wondered if it was true, and if it isn't, would some clever person know what height you have to drop a penny off the building for the velocity to kill someone rather unpleasantly?
There's terminal velocity, isn't there? So there'd be a point. I mean, it's not going to get eternally faster, infinitely faster, the higher you go. There's a point at which it would never get faster. Did you also, weren't there bits about, you can see in the pavement at the bottom of the Empire State Building, you can see the grooves where pennies have hit or something like that? I think there was probably a kid at my school who went a little bit further than the classic.
I've not heard that one, but it wouldn't, yeah. I don't think they would let you drop a penny off it. I've been up there a couple of times. They're fastidious about dropping things off.
Yeah, and then there's fences up and everything, isn't there? You'd struggle to... I love that one. I can't. I mean, I can't believe I've reached the age of. Say again.
I thank you for loving the question. I love board games, by the way.
Shameful behaviour. Absolutely shameful. Well, shameless. Shameful. They mean the same thing almost. All right. It's on the board. And your enthusiasm for board games is registered. And I can't believe.
Can I say one last thing before I go, James?
Of course you can. Yeah.
Please don't go on holiday. It really ruins my. I have to go.
I have to go on holiday to remind my family why they want me to go to work, you see.
Okay, well, I'd say it's empty without you, mate.
Oh, you're so
it's
sweet.
A horrible couple of weeks.
It's like putting in a shift for that board game now, isn't it?
No, that is true. Board game aside, that is true.
Thank you.
Great speaking with you, mate.
Oh, likewise. Thank you, Tony. I think some of the stand-ins did a great job. Tom certainly did, and Chris Bryant got some lovely feedback. Angela Rayner, Wes Streeting, all got some big plaudits. And quite a few people said they quite like Jeremy Hunt as well, would you believe? 23 minutes after 12 is the time. Milton is in Rome. Milton, question or answer?
Good morning.
Hello.
It's a question.
Right.
Okay, so I am of Afro-Caribbean descent, and I've only just realised that I actually do need to use sunblock.
What happened?
No. I suddenly started listening to experts. What are you going to do? I mean,
I see. I thought you got burnt or something like that.
Well, yes, my skin has experienced some tenderness.
Yes,
but still, you know, like most people, I would have ignored it and carried
right.
on. But okay, so my I'm here and I'm getting mosquito bites as well.
Yes,
and so. I normally use a body cream to keep my young and fresh looking.
I get you. Is it coconut based? Is it coconut butter?
It is, of course. Yes, exactly that. Yeah.
Same here. I like that. Makes you smell like a bounty bar, which I'm told some ladies quite like. Milton, I don't know what your experiences are in this field.
No comment on the woman front. So, the question that I have...
Yeah.
Is that I'm now using four things on my skin, whereas I normally would only use the one. I have
the body cream. The suntan
I
lotion.
Have the body cream, the suntan lotion.
The mosquito repellent. The
mosquito repellent and the bite treatment, the balm.
Oh, the bite treatment as well. Yeah, okay.
Yes, 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 yes. So the question here is, which order should I put them on in?
I was expecting a scientific question for some reason. I suppose it is in a way. But
which order is most effective?
Yeah.
And do any of them sort of counteract the other? Or, does the coconut oil actually attract mosquitoes? Should I?
God, I hadn't thought of that. Makes you more.
I've been thinking, James, for a couple of years. I've been listening to you.
Yes.
And thank you. To echo your previous. Please don't go on holiday. I don't know why you would require to go. And why can't you do the show from wherever you are? I mean, just like I'm doing now, you can do. Anyway.
I need a rest, mate. Just because I make it seem so easy doesn't mean it doesn't exact
you
an enormous.
You do.
An enorm- also, I Keith think. Needs a rest. Imagine what Keith would have to pay. He loves it when someone comes in to do my holiday cover because they treat him with respect. They treat him with respect. They treat him like an esteemed professional colleague. Little do they know.
Indeed.
But you're very kind. I like the question. And also, I'm quite interested in the answer. So, we're going to go with the coconut body butter, are we?
Yes.
Anything, because the coconut might be specific, something that the mosquitoes are attracted to, would it cancel out the repellent? And then the suntan lotion?
The fact is that since I got here 10 days ago, they've had a go at me. I mean, they recognise
the mosquitoes.
I'm not a local, and they figure, they're gonna have a pop at me.
Oh no, that's not right. There's vinegar is good. Drink a lot of vinegar.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'd rather get bitten.
Do you not like vinegar?
No.
Some nice vinegar. No, I mean, you're in Rome. You could have some balsamic. Yeah. Put a lot of balsamic on your salad.
Yeah, I get that, but that is in a very limited situation.
Yeah, but a little swig of cider vinegar, of cider vinegar now and then is actually quite pleasant. Very good for your guts. Keeps you regular.
I'm sure it is, but.
My daughter was covered in mosquito bites a few years ago in Greece, and we were sitting in a taverna, and a lovely lady at the next table. Was concerned for her and gave her advice to drink a little bit of vinegar, and so she did. And I mean, obviously, she nearly gagged because it's horrible, but I don't think she got bitten again all holiday.
Okay.
So it's worth a thought. Right. It's worth it. I mean, it's better than being covered. Go on.
Just a drop then would possibly.
Look it up. I'm not necessarily qualified to be giving out medical advice on reflection, but I just have. I'd have thought a couple of capfuls or something like that. It's just enough for it to be excreted later in the day. Enough for you to be giving off an undetectable hint of vinegar, but it would be detectable to your mosquitoes. You see.
Fair enough.
You can have that for nothing, Milton.
Thank you. And I appreciate your time.
You're very welcome.
I've been thinking for a couple of years for a sensible question.
And now you've got a cracker.
And finally, I got one on.
Yeah, and it's a winner.
And the board game would be just a bonus.
Yeah, all right. I don't want to introduce this as a new sort of precedent on the program. Everybody being, because it undermines all the compliments now. It's Tony's fault, this, isn't it? He sort of said lovely things about the program and me going on holiday, but very hard for me to separate that from the naked desire for a free board game, lads. I don't know. 12:29 is the time. Shall I squeeze in Hannah, or shall we take her after? Yeah, Hannah in Chigwell, question or answer?
I have an answer.
Oh, fantastic. Carry on, Hannah.
To the crying question.
Oh, yes.
I think I do, anyway.
Go on.
So when you get stressed or angry, which is normally why you cry, you produce stress hormones like cortisol and adrenaline and other nasties. And the body, when you cry, it's one of the body's ways of excreting the kind of byproduct or those hormones that you don't need, I think.
Yeah, of course it must be. Qualifications?
Well, so I'm a nurse, but I attended a psychology lecture, and that's what the psychologist was telling me.
That's perfect.
So, yeah. I have a feeling to take her word for it.
No, that is brilliant. And it makes perfect sense, because there's got to be some sort of chemical explanation for the feelings that you have, and getting the chemicals out of your system has got to be part of the reason why we don't spend our whole lives in states of, you know, euphoria or cheese-based... cheese-based joy.
I don't know why you cry if you're happy, though.
Same reason. It's a different hormone, or it's a hormonal reaction. Some people cry. Some people don't. I love it. Gin and tonic, a lot of people are saying for mosquitoes as well. I thought the tonic, there's quinine in tonic, which it's good for malaria, but I don't know if it actually repels. Anyway, I digress. Hannah,
it's gin and tonic.
You don't need a reason. Here's a round of applause.
Thank you.
Thank you. And Amelia Cox is here now with the headline.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973.
32 minutes after 12 is the time. We've done the crying one and we've done the honeymoon one. Why are sweet potatoes one of your five a day when potatoes are not? Why do we call it a W when it is, in fact, certainly on keyboards, at least a double V? If you threw a coin off the Empire State Building and it landed on the head of somebody below, would it kill them? And in what order should you put on your various unguents when you're on holiday? And the four that we have selected... For the purposes of this question, thanks to Milton, are your coconut body oil or body butter, moisturising cream, your suntan lotion, your mosquito repellent, but also your bite treatment. Does it matter? Is it going to have any effect upon the efficaciousness of any or all of the unguents if you were to put them on in a different order? 0345 6060973. Lisa is in Watford. Lisa, question or answer?
Answer for you.
Carry on.
Sweet potatoes. Oh. The reason
it's, good, it's lovely when callers have pet names for presenters, isn't it?
Oh, okay. I like it.
Go on. Why is that one of my five a day when a normal potato isn't?
It's to do with the structure of the carbohydrate in it. So in potatoes, the structure is starch, and in sweet potatoes, it's basically a sugar. And to be one of your five a day, a fruit or vegetable has to be a non-starchy product, vegetable, plant. And also in the coloured sweet potatoes, you contain chemicals that act as precursors to vitamin A and stuff like that.
And
so
what is there a genus or whatever the correct term is? They're in different categories of food.
Completely. Sweet potatoes are related to morning glory. So they're part of the Convolvaceae family, where normal potatoes are Solanaceae, so they're part of the nightshade family.
There you go.
So they're nothing to do with carrots.
Oh, really?
The colour of some of them. No.
What else is in the morning glory family?
Things like bindweed, Japanese knotweed, bugleweed, all those things that you really don't want in your garden.
Oh, so it's a bit of an anomaly then, by dint of being desirable.
Yeah, it's just because it's a tuber, and I think it's called a potato because
it looks like a potato. That's what I said to Jack when he rang in with the question. But I didn't go anywhere near as far as you did. What are your qualifications? That's an amazing answer, and you know all your dropping those technical terms into the conversation like they were going out of fashion.
I'm a medical herbalist. So basically, I've studied plants and their effects on the body, etc.
I'm sure you know this. You'd have been burnt as a witch 400 years ago, wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah.
Quite relaxed about it. No, really. No, but I wish I could remember what book I was reading recently. I think it was by Andrew Taylor. And it featured a character who was a medical herbalist, and just handed down through generations the plants and the herbs that had effects on everything from period pain to to verrucas or something like that. And it's probably an under appreciated discipline that you practice.
A lot of the drugs that are in the BNF are based on plants. And you were talking about quinine earlier,
I was,
which comes from a plant. And
comes from tree bark, so, doesn't it? Does it come from? No, that's aspirin.
Yeah, it does. Cinchona. Yeah. No, it comes from bark.
My father-in-law was raving about turmeric, the effect that turmeric has had on his joints since he started taking it. And he takes it with a bit of black pepper because that aids absorption.
That's it.
Oh, this is lovely.
And also to put it in some oil, coconut oil. And that will aid the absorption of it.
Don't tell
Milton. The last witch to be burnt in Europe.
Yes?
Mosquitoes, just get them with a sledgehammer.
not when it's on your husband's head.
No. Get them before they land on you. But the last witch was burnt in Spain in 1926.
Good
that
God.
It wasn't that long ago.
Is that right? I did not know that. Oh, you're well over the line for a round of applause. But a slightly silly question. What is your favourite herb?
What? Favourite herb?
Or your favourite thing, as in the thing that has the most profound impact or widespread impact that many people listening to this won't know about. Have you got one?
Belladonna.
What does that do? I thought that was a poison.
It's only available to herbalists. That's deadly nightshade, yeah. Oh. But poisons are only about the dose.
What does belladonna do in a good dose?
It's a general relaxant for kind of internal muscle spasms, sweating, stuff like that.
Wow. Yeah. I could talk to you all day. Yeah, I find this stuff fascinating. I find this stuff absolutely fascinating. How much of your own gear do you grow?
Not that much because I live in London and it's a bit polluted.
So you get it
by
suppliers.
Bit of a brown bottle. Yeah,
no, I don't.
Friends have been
sensational.
I have gone pick stuff for people when they've needed it. You know, kind of nipped out into the woods and picked it.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. I love it, Lisa. Thank you. Now, that's an absolute education. Have a round of applause on me.
Thank you.
No, thank you. Martin is in Canterbury. Martin, question or answer?
It's a question, James, and it's good to speak to you.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's about, I'm not sure if it's specifically about the First World War, but when you look at war records, they refer to the theatre of war, the Western Front, the Western European theatre of war, and it seems quite a curious term. Theatre. Why do they use the term theatre of war?
As in, I see what you mean. Like, what's it got? It's not in a theatre. It's a blooming Great War. So why do they?
It's a big field. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, is it? I'm trying to think what the word would be. Is it because they're trying to? I mean, it means like the totality of the war, doesn't it? Like everything that is. You talk about the theatre of war. You're not just talking about one battle or one.
I think so because I came across this because I'm doing some family history at the moment and as you say it's a totality because it was one of my distant relations was within a bigger group of battles so that could be the case.
I don't. But why theatre? Why would they choose that word and not choose another word? I'll try and find out for you. I like that one. I have never thought of that before, but they're my favourite questions. The ones that have been right under our noses. All of our lives. Why do we say theatre of war? Thank you, Martin. 0345 606 0973 is the number you need if you think you can answer that question. Glenn's in Westcliff. Glenn, question or answer?
Ah, lang tida nespacha, Lisa. That's old English for a long time no speak. How you doing?
Here he is, our resident old English expert. English expert, even.
That's the one. Getting older.
Where have you been? What's going on? We get lots of questions.
Well, like I said, I'm actually calling from Basel, from back at work. Last time I tried to phone you was during lockdown when I was furloughed. So I live in Westcliff. But there's been nothing relevant, really. You've got a new linguist now. You've replaced me.
You mean Martin up in Cumbria?
Yeah, he's brilliant.
You've got to get in quick, Glenn, if you're going to... He's nicking your act, mate.
Totally, mate. Anyway, so, so W, where's it come from?
Mm.
So in the Old English or Anglo-Saxon period, we'd use a letter called wun, which looks a bit like a stylized P, and that's how you make the W sound. It was based on an early sort of Germanic rune. And it's quite we lost most of our Germanic rule letters after the Norman conquest. And this is why W is relevant because the Normans wanted to make the English spellings more relevant to Norman French, or they wanted to sort of francoise the English spellings. So rather than using one, they would write two U's together to make the W sound. Hence, it became W. And like everything, over time, we've got lazy and shortened it. to just look like the two V's.
There it is.
You know what I mean?
So trying to sound more French and less German.
Yeah, exactly. Incidentally, that's pretty much how language develops. We get lazy. We find quicker and easier ways of writing and saying things. Hence, as in, this is relevant, Pony Monash became Honeymoon.
Oh, look at that. What a hat. There you go. Great play. Honey Mona. Honeymoon. John will like that. Did you like his car owner virus joke?
Don't even start the car.
Honestly, stuff I have to put up with in the name of work, Glenn. Honestly. Anyway, it's nice to have you back. And you get another one of these all day long. Have you?
Cheers, mate.
I didn't ask what your qualifications are. Anglo-Saxon is your passion, but you translate poetry a lot as well.
I'm basically a huge Anglo-Saxon nerd, so I started learning to speak Old English about 10 years ago. I'm never going to be an expert, but it's just a good hobby.
You're already an expert, mate.
People keep asking me stuff, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. That's it. You've got to own it. Lovely stuff. Thank you, Glenn. And there it is. It's an attempt to sound less German and more French. Which, as he tells us, explains quite a few evolutions in the quite a few stages in the evolution of common modern English. 12:42 is the time, so we still need answer. Got that one? The Empire State Building question, the Theatre of War question, Milton's Skin Regime question. That's all I've got. Okay, Oliver is in Walthamstow. Oliver, question or answer?
Hello, James. It's a question.
Carry on, Oliver.
I've had this in my mind since before you went on holiday, so I'm glad Mystery Hour's back. So how quickly does it take a strand of your hair to turn grey, or does it grow out grey? Because I've kept noticing greys appearing on my chest hair, and they seem to pop up every day or two, and I'm not sure if they're turning grey overnight, or if I'm just not noticing them growing.
Does a fully grown hair turn grey, or does a brand new hair come out grey, is the question?
Yeah.
Yeah, I really liked, I've just undone my shirt to check.
Oh, I was looking at my chest there a minute ago while I was on hold as well, I've noticed more since when you went on holiday. And I don't think
say since we put you on hold, I said it hasn't been that long. I quite like that. I don't know why. I quite like the, I like it on my beard as well, the bits of grey. I don't know if I feel the same when it's entirely grey, but I quite like the salt and pepper, they call it, don't they?
Well, I've got an entirely grey moustache.
Have you?
Yeah, ginger beard and a grey moustache. So that's
intriguing.
Yeah, it plays on my mind a little bit.
Right, so it would do. And then you've grown them out, have you? You wear a ginger beard and a grey moustache.
Yeah, but it just looks more like an invisible moustache.
It's a mixture, though. It's going to be a bit peppered. I like that. I will find out for you. So, I mean, we should really know this, shouldn't we? Does a fully grown hair suddenly turn grey, or does? I think it does. Didn't someone? Someone on telly sort of go grey overnight? Was it Phillip Schofield?
I feel like I'm going grey overnight at quite a young age.
I'm doing my best, Oliver. everyone's a critic.
I need someone to put my mind at rest.
Let's find out. How does it work? Do they go grey? Does a fully grown hair go grey, or does a new hair grow grey? Does it go grey or grow grey? That's not bad for 12:45. Normally that kind of verbal dexterity deserts me at about 11:45. Go grey or grow grey. 0345 60 60 973.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
It is 12:47. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I like this tweet. It says, I'm currently listening to two grown men examining and comparing the colour of their chest hair live on the radio. It can only be Mystery Hour. Indeed, it can. And a shout out quickly to Michael, who says, I found my first grey chest hair last week. Oh, dear. I think that getting older is a bit like birth and death, in that there's a tendency to think that it's the first time that it's happened to anybody. In a way, every death and every birth feels like the first one ever. You never get bored with death or birth. Every birth is supremely exciting. Every death is utterly heartbreaking. But getting old is a bit like that as well. You find your first grey chest hair, you think it's absolutely incredible. My God, I've got a grey... But of course, it's hardly news, is it? Outside your own chest. There we are. It is now, Michael. I've shared it with the nation. 12:48 is the time. Angela is in Norwich. Angela, question or answer?
Good afternoon, James. It's an answer.
Carry on, Angela.
It's an answer to the question about theatre of war.
Oh, yes.
Have you heard of a chap called Carl von Clausewitz? Great strategist, military strategist.
I think I have, yes. On War, he wrote, didn't he?
That's right. Yes. And he wrote it in German, vom Krieger. And one of the challenges is that having written it in German, the Western world then translated it into English.
Right.
And he defined the term Kriegstheater
yes.
by translating the original Latin term theatrum belli, which means denoting a portion of space over which war prevails with protected boundaries so that we can understand it. So it makes it interdependent. It makes it independent, makes it a specific area. It comes from the Latin, theatrum belli.
And the whole area, so everything that is contained within that war is in
That's
that
right.
the theatre of war. So does theatrum not translate directly as theatre then?
Yes, it does.
It does as well. So it's also the word they'd have used for where, I don't know, Plautius put his plays on.
Exactly. And if we think about things like amphitheatre...
Yeah, of course.
The word goes straight back to defining a space in which something specific happens. And so you have theatrum belli, which is
great
the theatre of war.
Great work. Qualifications, please?
MA in military history.
Oh, lovely stuff. I bet you never thought it would come in this useful, did you?
Not quite, no.
Round of applause for Angela, please. Oh, I like that one a lot. And that is... It wasn't Milton's question. Who asked that question? Martin. I've got a Milton and a Martin mixed up, so that's Martin's question dealt with. And Angela answered that one. 12:50 is the time. Harry's in Norwood Junction. Harry, question or answer?
I have a question, Mr. O'Brien. Thank you very much for having me on.
You're very welcome. Carry on.
I am 34, and only three of my wisdom teeth have come through so far. And I'm wondering why they come through in the first place, because they have coincided these three times with breakups, and I'm wondering whether stress or hormones had anything at all to do with it.
Oh, bless you. Are you serious?
Yeah, it's weird. It's
You've
weird.
Grown a wisdom tooth every time you've broken up with someone.
Yeah, I don't know whether growing is the right
word. Don't have any more relationships, will you? You won't have, your mouth won't be big enough.
Well, I need one more for the quartet, so I should probably go for another one, shouldn't I?
Is that... I've got... They're weird. Everyone's different with wisdom teeth, I think. Or not everyone.
Yeah,
but not everyone has all four come through. I've got one that's still below the surface. It pops up every now and then.
They poke their enamel heads through and then they sort of stay or they don't, and it's all very confusing.
Mine goes back down again. So some of the worst pain I've ever been in involved an infected wisdom tooth.
Ooh.
Really nasty. I was frightened of peanuts for years after that, because I think I got it from a Snickers. And the dentist has a look. So some people, when you run your tongue right around the back of your mouth, there's no room for any more, which means they've probably come through. Or you have actually got a bit of unoccupied gum, which means there might be one under there.
To come.
And then some of them come through and cause all manner of problems and pain. I like your question. What prompts them to come through at the time? It's unlikely that it's linked to emotional trauma, Harry, I think.
Very. It's probably, congenital, I suppose, isn't it?
Coincidental in the context of your breakups, but just all right, we'll find out.
Exactly.
Why do they appear when they appear?
Yes, please.
Love it.
Thank you very much, James.
Thank you very much. Cheers, Harry. Wisdom teeth, Harry. And someone can answer that, ideally a dentist. 12:52 is the time. Barbara is in Melksham in Wiltshire. Barbara, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
It's the answer to can hair turn grey or does
go
it
grey, grey or grow grey, Barbara? Go grey or grow grey?
It has to grow grey.
Right.
It can't turn grey. The hair's dead as soon as it grows out of the hair follicle,
it can't
turn grey overnight. It can't just turn grey. It has to grow grey.
Bit daft of me, really, wasn't it? Not to remember that.
Really?
How can something dead... Well, I suppose dead things can change colour, can't they? But
they can, but hair can't.
But they all
would. Unless you dye it, of course. But,
if one did, they all would. So what people probably miss is that we shed quite a lot of hair, don't we? So that's why you go grey, because you're shedding the old hair and growing the new hair, which is grey. And therefore, you cannot immediately go grey your hair. So our man's chest hair... Whose chest hair was it? What?
It's all the same. Hair is the same.
Oliver's newly sprouted, and Michael's just found his first ever one. That's grown complete. That's come out in the...
But hair on the body,
eyebrows,
eyelashes, chest hair, pubic hair, has a shorter life than hair on the head.
It does indeed, which is why...
So it may appear to change overnight, but it doesn't.
You've just grown a new one.
I have good qualifications on that as well.
I wondered where you were going there, Barbara. I'm very What are your qualifications?
I was a colour specialist in London for many years.
Does anyone ever get their chest hair dyed?
Yes, they do.
Really? People like the late, great Peter. Nick Ferrari, has he ever been in for a quick touch-up on his chest hair?
Oh, I couldn't say.
Have a round of applause. Thank you. 12:54 is the time. Charlie's in Bristol. Charlie, question or answer? Charlie, are you there? No, let's have a little recap on. So, is that? It's not just me, is it? Is he there? No, cool.
Hello. David, you hear me?
Oh, yeah. What are you doing, Charlie? You're on live on the radio, mate. You can't be faffing about like this. No. Okay. David's in Richmond. David, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
We don't have wisdom teeth. Some of us don't have wisdom teeth now because we are phylogenetically superior, i.e., we don't need them any longer.
Yes. That wasn't the question.
I know. It doesn't answer the stress thing, but it explains why we don't have them now.
But why do they come through when they come through?
That's to do with the same with hormonal and adolescence and growth, just as our bone structure isn't fully established till 22 years of age, 23.
Yeah. Is there an upper limit on it? So if your wisdom teeth haven't come through by the time you're 30, they're never going to come through.
Yeah, they're not going to come through.
Is that right? So it's just the same as, let's think of another example, just the same as anything else that grows, really. I mean, it's the same as your teeth, your baby teeth falling out. It's just a cycle, exactly. a cycle of time, of humanity, as it were.
Yeah, exactly.
I quite like that.
It's an evolutionary adaptation to not have wisdom teeth because we don't need them to chew branches and trees anymore.
Did we used to chew branches and trees?
No, just made that up.
No, I thought you might have done. You mean, but we would have eaten a lot more uncooked and unprocessed foliage. We'd have been nuts and berry. I don't know why I started actually doing it then when I was talking. But you would have needed more of a sort of vegetarian diet, and you'd have needed to do more. Uncooked is probably the crucial point here, isn't it? Uncooked vegetables and I like that a lot. Qualifications?
Yeah. I'm a medic.
That'll do. Round of applause.
Yeah. Thank you.
No, thank you, David. So many people now are telling me that they've got white... Elliot just found a white-tipped hair. He says, I nearly took a photo. God, what's wrong with me? I don't know, mate. Why do I have some grey hairs, not half a grey hair? I think somebody's got lost a bit in translation there. The short answer is I don't know, but and the sun bleaching your hair, Paul, has not relevant in any way to any element of this conversation. And look, I chose the age of 30 arbitrarily. It's not that, it's just that, that nothing is going to make your wisdom teeth come through except the passage of time. And it will be at a different time for different people in the same way that your baby teeth only. Fibrous, Julie, that was the word I was looking for. Fibrous plants. Thank you. Fred's in Manchester. Fred, question or answer?
Question, please.
Carry on, Fred.
Before I ask the question, a quick painting of the picture.
Thank you.
In European languages, there are symbols above or below a letter to help with its pronunciation.
There are.
A child at school is told to break down a word so they can read it.
Yes.
For example, YouTube, using that philosophy, becomes YouTube. Google, Googly. Read becomes Riyadh.
Yes.
So how come we don't have symbols above or below the word? Because we call it Loughborough and not Loughborough.
Loughborough. Or Loughborough.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, that's not what accents do in other languages, really.
It does in German with the umlaut.
And does the cedilla do that in Spanish as well?
Good question. Not sure about Spanish. I don't know much about Spanish.
But the grave and the acute angles in French don't. They just give you the how you pronounce an E. They don't tell you what you do with an elided pair of words. Whether you, I guess the short answer is we don't need it. We've muddled through without. Is it? And you've only got a minute left. So unless Sheila Fogarty knows, Fred, I don't.
Hablo español.
Really? Yeah. Pardon? Bless you.
I might be able to help with the Spanish question.
Why don't we have any accents on English words?
I don't know.
No, me neither. 03456060973, but be quick. Charlie's in Bristol. Charlie, question or answer?
Hello, James. Answer.
Carry on.
So it's an answer to the penny falling off the ice there, the tower.
Go on.
So a penny reaches a terminal velocity after about 50 feet of freefall. So, yeah. You know, the Empire State Building is a hell of a lot taller.
It is. So you're not going to kill anyone. It's going to hurt a bit. Well, you're going to know it's going to smart, but it's no... Yeah, go on, sorry.
The terminal velocity is only about 25 mile an hour.
Yeah.
For example, you know, give a comparison, when you're playing paintball...
Yeah,
you're getting hit by paintballs going 150 mile an hour.
There you go.
They're heavier. Round of applause. And they're
You've done it. So the answer's no. You don't die.
Yeah, the answer's no. I won't overcomplicate it.
Perfect. Well done, Tony. Will be happy. Was it Tony? It was Tony. Round of applause for qualifications. Come back. Give that back.
Engineer.
What?
I'm an aerodynamics engineer.
Well, yeah, that'll do. Round of applause for Tony. Absolutely, all day long. That's it. I'm going to pick a winner. And I don't know that I wrote her name down, but I think she was called Angela. Was the medicinal herbalist called Angela? Angela wins the ball. Obviously, Angela wins. Also, I wasn't trying to be funny when I said, do you grow all your own gear? Lots of people think I was doing some sort of subliminal, druggy, Withnell and I type reference. I was not. I just didn't know what other word to say for herbs. Anyway, that's it from me for another day. We'll do it again tomorrow from 10 up next. And go and see Sister Act if you get the chance. An absolutely brilliant show. And goodness me, we're so lucky to have Beverly Knight. And indeed, we're so lucky to have Sheila Fogarty as well.
Oh, shucks. Thanks.